GIF or GIF?
GIF.
GIF.
GIF. GIF. I'm totally for GIF. You're overruled. That's how we do it in Germany. Okay, I start in German. Hallo, herzlich willkommen zu Nerds FM. Nach einer furchtbar langen Pause.
Ja, viel zu lange.
Viel zu lange, selbstverständlich. Dafür haben wir heute mal wieder einen Gast. Bei uns ist Lindsay und wir haben
live zugeschaltet.
Live zugeschaltet aus
über Satellit
aus Kalifornien ist bei uns ins Studio 3D. Virtualisiert.
Ja. Wir haben in Wirklichkeit Oculus Rift gekauft und deshalb.
Ach so, genau. Nee, ich habe schon meinen Prototypen. Und dann ist uns aufgefallen, dass Lindsay ja gar nicht so gut Deutsch kann, jedenfalls nicht sprechen. Und darum haben wir beschlossen, die Sendung heute zum ersten Mal in Englisch zu machen.
Auf Englisch.
Ja. So, any jokes about my inability to speak in TH, please to the comments section.
Still better than my German.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Where are you from? Have some beer, please. Cheers. Cheers.
Zum Wohl.
Where am I from?
This was a real question.
I'm from Ohio.
From Ohio.
Ohio.
Oh, I couldn't hear that.
Really?
Do you have an Ohioan accent?
I think I lost it, actually.
What would an Ohioan... What's the adjective, like, the possessive?
Ohioan.
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 Accent sound like way over the top.
It's difficult. It's kind of southern, a bit.
Let me check where Ohio is.
It's on the border... Where I'm from is on the border of Kentucky.
Oh,
wait, no.
What do you call a carbonated beverage?
I grew up calling it pop, but it's actually, I've changed to soda.
Okay, because I hear people from Kentucky call it a Coke.
They do.
So I've heard.
So Ohio calls it pop.
That's crazy.
And I have not said pop since I left.
I call it fizzy drink.
Fizzy drink.
No, I don't. That sounds ridiculous.
But no, Ohio is known as the Midwest.
Yes.
And the reason it's the Midwest is because everyone gets confused, but it's how the country was settled. So at the time it was the Midwest. It was the Middle West.
But now it's far to the west.
Far to the east. It's East Coast time.
East Coast, yeah.
It's Eastish.
It's East Coast time.
So where are you from?
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, I heard that. Like that.
I think if you were from Ohio, you say Dayton. Not Dayton.
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 Dayton. Dayton sounds good.
Dayton.
Okay, looks nice on the map.
Yeah.
And Ohio is very German, you just told us before the show. You have the own...
In my grandmother's town, she grew up... my family and my dad grew up in a little farm town called Coldwater. And in the... It's just farmland. And in the churches, there's German script in the windows. My grandmother's last name is Gruß.
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 Gruß. Gott zum Gruße.
Yep. And it's very German. There's actually there's a city nearby there called New Bremen, but it's New Bremen.
New Bremen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
New Bremen.
Is the old one not good enough for you? I've never been to Bremen.
Really?
And no. Then there's actually a place.
There's no reason to go there.
So I've heard.
There's a debate whether or not there's another town nearby called Münster. Which I think might be Munster.
Yeah.
The umlaut is messed up.
Yeah.
But they have one of the best Oktoberfests.
Okay.
Ever.
Oh, Minster, I see.
Minster, but Minster is also an English word for church, I think.
Right.
I could be wrong.
So is Minster.
I actually think this is a misspelled version of Munster.
Yeah, but Munster is also a church. That's what was he trying to...
Yeah.
But where my last name comes from is right outside of Munster.
I see.
But so we're all... Right. The last names in my grandma's town are like Schwiedermann and Griesdorn and weird.
And you have the only Hofbräuhaus outside of Munich?
Cincinnati, I think.
Cincinnati, yeah.
Cincinnati, but Cincinnati actually has a thing called Mainstrasse.
Mainstrasse?
Mainstrasse. And Mainstrasse has, like, there are German, like, very... traditional, like, German Tudor buildings on Mainstraße. And there's a like a maypole thing.
Mainstraße Village okay. Association. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then there's
there's an English pub on Mainstraße.
But yeah, Ohio is quite German. There was an article written recently that said that 50% of one county right in the middle of the state speaks German still.
But those are not like Amish people.
No, they speak German at home.
At home. So it's their main language at home, yep. Really.
Yeah, it's very much. And when I first came to Germany, I actually knew my grandmother always has meats and cheeses and breads out all the time.
Okay.
My grandfather would eat pork with something sweet, which most people never did. So pork and like jam or applesauce.
And yeah, when but I totally couldn't do that.
Yeah, but it's very German.
Is it really?
But yeah.
I always thought it's something cool.
Maybe it's
delicious.
I mean, you just had a schnitzel, and it was of course with Preiselbeeren, with cranberries, but with.
My grandfather, when he was a farmer, and he made he slaughtered pigs and made like head cheese. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
And what did you do then?
Then.
After Ohio.
After Ohio.
Yeah. Why did we invite you here? I have a question for you. Why did we? No.
Who are you?
Who are you?
That's a hard question.
Maybe we should talk for a quick moment about something completely different. Sketch 3.0 is out.
Congratulations, everybody.
Today. And I tried it.
You tried it?
Does it crash?
No, never. It's so much better than the old version, at least from the first. They completely changed, they enhanced the usability quite a lot. Like before, they didn't have buttons for alignment and stuff, and you always have to go. And now they have some nice buttons, and they have really what's really nice. They have a symbol feature, so mm-hmm. you can just copy an element and still change the first version, and all the other versions will change too. So you can.
So like smart objects in Photoshop.
Is it like smart objects? I don't know.
I thought that's what makes them smart.
I thought. Okay, I don't.
Fireworks had this.
Yeah, maybe.
And this is what I always liked about fireworks.
Yeah, that's and Sketch has an R2, and it's really nicely implemented. It's very obvious how to do it, and I think I have to buy the new version because I was scrolling around a little bit and I thought about skipping it because it's $50.
Mm. Yeah,
and it will
the
be
new
even
one.
Yeah, huh? And there's no upgrade.
Yeah, I tried buying it today, and the App Store, the Mac App Store, hadn't updated yet.
So you bought the old version?
I got into the volume license program and I bought two copies for me and my coworker. And I think they sent us serial numbers for the old version because they started with SK1. I think that stands for Sketch 1. And I also, like, within minutes of purchasing them, I realized that my buddy is actually eligible for a free upgrade because if you purchased Sketch 2 after March 1st, then you get a free update.
Ah,
and they announced it on March 22nd, ooh, which is when he bought it. Shit. So, yeah. But I think it's, I mean, I haven't tried it yet, but I think it's, it looks pretty good.
I hope it is less crashy.
It's
such a great app.
Yeah, I mean, smart objects or the lack of was really my main problem with it. Mm-hmm. But
they have modernized the whole interface. I mean, the icons looked kind of dated in the old version, and now it looks much better, and everything is just.
For me, the website still hasn't updated. It's weird.
The Sketch website?
It's bohemiancoding.com/sketch.
Yeah.
I would love to see transitions in Sketch.
Oh, yeah. But that's, like, super hard to do, I think.
Yeah.
Like, animation, it's, like, a whole different kind of problem.
It would be awesome if you could treat it like a motion graphics program or something.
Oh, yeah.
And have
Oh, I have Sketch, the old version 2 here.
But if you had, you know, standard, it's pretty standard iOS transitions. that you could just drag and drop onto your Elements.
Right. I mean, there's like, isn't there a lot of these prototyping platforms that have that built in? And I think I saw a plugin for Sketch for one of these platforms where you could like export to their prototyping thing.
What was it?
From Sketch. I forgot the name. But people that are smarter than me will probably remember if they ever listened to this.
Quartz Composer, no.
No, it wasn't Quartz Composer.
Mm-mm. There isn't really good tool for I know some...
It was something web-based, though.
Okay.
And their icon, I think, is like a layer of cubes. So that doesn't help at all. That, like...
And it has a menu with three horizontal lines, yeah. And, and like a flat design. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. You used it.
My best friend back in San Francisco is a motion graphics designer, an animator, and she's teaching at the College of Arts in San Francisco. And basically everyone there is learning how to do app design and After Effects, so they can do really proper transitions.
But After Effects is so expensive.
I know.
Yeah. I've bought Motion.
Does Apple still make that?
Apple still makes Motion. And it's not that bad. I mean, it's like $45, so it's worth a shot. But it's like way more complicated. It's not as easy to use as like something like Sketches, for instance.
And they do app transitions in After Effects?
That's common, though. I've heard that before.
Yeah, and you would get a movie file and you would just look at how it works.
Oh, okay. I mean, it would be so great if there would be so often. I mean, even doing something in design and Photoshop files and redoing this in code is already hard enough. But getting a transition just right, especially if a designer had about 3 hours or something to just refine this half second of transition and every movement is laid out in some way, and to redo it in code is so complicated.
Yeah.
And it would be, if I would do some kind of transition tool today, I would write it, I would give the ability to throw out some configuration code or that you just have to put in your Xcode file and in your .m file and everything is fine and the transition looks exactly as you would expect it to look or something like that.
Mm-hmm. The nice thing about the web versus iOS is that with the web, like somebody like me can change things really easily. And I know how to change transitions and things, and I don't need to have someone in After Effects.
You mean like Interface Builder?
Haven't you tried it?
From what I was asking how to draw a line between these elements in the app. They're like, it's really difficult. You should probably not try it.
A line
in Interface Builder.
No, yeah, just
shouldn't draw a line
in code.
In code.
Oh yeah, complicated.
Yeah.
In code is complicated.
Why?
Because nobody draws lines.
Because programming.
Because it's not the internet.
I mean, like, a diagonal line isn't easy in HTML either.
Yeah, I just would like to...
I mean, you can do SVG.
Yeah.
Or drawing a line at all isn't that easy.
I mean, it depends. I mean, do you just want to have a line on screen or do you really want to draw it, right?
I see.
I mean, even if you just want to have it, you need to know how. I mean, drawing a box with a background, that's
knowing
easy.
Knowing how is, like, usual.
Yeah, of course, but HTML is made for drawing lines.
No. Yeah. Well, I feel like the barrier to entry to learning Objective-C versus HTML, CSS, and JavaScript is much higher.
Yeah,
as a designer.
Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, what's good about Objective-C? You only have to learn one language. You don't have to learn this HTML and CSS, and if you I mean, you need some kind of JavaScript in most of the cases and stuff, and that makes it kind of hard. And if you know Objective-C, there's this whole toolbox you have to learn, but at least you don't have to learn another language. So it's okay-ish, I think.
Yeah.
Depends if...
I've made my peace with Objective-C.
So you are designing... I'm trying to get...
Sure, yeah.
yeah, whatever.
No, I have done interaction design of some kind for over 10 years, probably.
I remember. What's interaction design?
What is interaction design?
Yeah, what's the difference between normal design and interaction design?
Explain like I'm 5 years old.
Oh. See that button? Where do you put it? I actually still find it quite hard to describe, but how things move and where you put something on the screen during information architecture so that you know how to structure a website or an app so that it makes sense to your user, presenting the right information at the right places.
So it's user interface design.
Yeah. But so not, I don't do pixels.
I don't do pixels ever.
I don't do pixels. I don't do, it's everything for me. It's everything. Because I'm a bit, I guess maybe, I don't know if I'm old school, but it's abstracted from people who do visual design, choosing the colors and gradients and shadows. This is not something I like doing it, but I never was quite fast enough at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm much more into figuring out what is the content of your app, what are you trying to create, and then finding a feature set that makes sense that you can build in a certain amount of time. And then also...
So you're doing the stuff that most of the people want somebody to do when they hire a designer, and then they...
And all they get is pixels.
And all they get is pixels.
Yeah, I mean, with a recent project, I mean, I always considered myself kind of a flunk-out designer and flunk-out computer scientist, because I sat right in the middle of user interface engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the technical and, like... design doesn't work unless you really can make it work in code. So mm-hmm. there's kind of going on the web, and I understand how the web works, but you know, it's really never good when a designer is off in a vacuum creating ponies and rainbows when code only can create a pony, if that makes any sense. But yeah,
it kind of makes. I mean, a few years ago, it was impossible to do it around design in HTML, and it's nearly impossible even today. But oftentimes, designers started making stuff round because nobody does it round on the internet. So let's be the first guy who does it round, and you end up with complicated stuff, and just to make it somehow work, and you will throw away the website because. Google isn't able to index it, and you are not able to change it in any way.
Yeah, or back in the day, you would have print designers who are trying to design for the web, and they're putting fonts and images. And
suddenly you resize the book and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's I've been doing some kind of markup probably since 2000. The first markup language I ever learned was LaTeX.
Horrible choice.
I didn't have a choice.
Fair enough. So LaTeX.
LaTeX.
Yeah, LaTeX.
LaTeX. LaTeX.
LaTeX. I think.
We call it LaTeX.
Yeah, you call it GIF, so nobody listens to
No, I was in college and I was a designer. I was a design student. And
The professor told you to go. College.
No. I was in my visual communication program, and... I wanted to learn how the internet worked, and
and so he told you to teach you LaTeX?
No.
Okay.
I also had to have like a campus for my studies. I had to have a job every year, basically. That mm-hmm. was it within my field. So the job I could find was creating a website for a math professor using only Linux. This was a nightmare for me because I was pushing typography and colors around.
Right.
But that was actually...
It's a Unix system, and you didn't know it.
Yeah, there's no interface. What do I do? Right. Command lining, and I learned all about PostScript and printing and LaTeX markup, and I copy-edited his math book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But wait, anyway, you didn't do the website in LaTeX, did you?
I don't remember.
I hope not. What's the professor's name? The website is probably still the way you left it.
Look, you can Google my name and then look for MATLAB. It was a MATLAB book. Anyway, but that was... I think that was the first... I was really afraid of, like, touching command line things, but...
Who isn't?
But as a design student, I was...
Especially, here.
Yeah.
It looks like... Yeah, I found your text file.
That was quick.
Wow. It's cool that it's still on the internet.
If you give me like a day or two, I could probably generate a PostScript file from which to generate an ODF file from which I could generate a PDF from which... Whoa.
Which we can update to the internet. So finally, we will...
Yeah.
Your course may actually be still in use. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe, yeah. Wow, I haven't seen this in a long time.
Reference. Very brief intro to MATLAB.
Yep, that was it.
Larry Snyder and Todd Young.
Ah, that was the guy's name. Yeah.
You get top billing.
And you wrote all the LaTeX by hand, or how did you do it?
It kind of looks handwritten.
Yeah.
Okay. I see a mixture of tabs and spaces.
I mean, it took me... I did HTML design too for some years, and it took me really ages until I started writing HTML code by hand. In the beginning, I was using GoLive. I don't know if...
oh, God. I remember that.
I loved it.
Really?
It was... Hmm? Until it was, until the Adobe boat, it was really great product.
Mm.
And
no, my first, I think this was the first, this was like the first really technical thing I ever had to do. I think I was maybe 18, 19, first year of college or something.
I
think.
I didn't leave high school until I was 20, so. It wasn't a joke.
So, yeah, you started using computers in college right away, or?
No, I'd been using a computer. We had an old Atari computer.
Okay.
When I was younger. It was one of the first MIDI computers. It was really good with MIDI.
Yeah.
Audio,
MIDI.
Maybe Atari
ST.
ST.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want it back.
You want it back?
Yeah, I want it back. I wanted, like, see this old computer, but yeah, it was just the first computer that I used. And then we switched to Windows at some point. Yeah, I had this little bee that ran around and this, like, neon green background. It looked like the Mac a bit. There was a trash can.
Oh, Windows 95.
No, it was the Atari. It was the Atari GUI.
Yeah, Atari was a total
Mac clone. Windows. I never mind.
Yeah, they had Windows too, yeah. And Atari was
like Windows as in window widgets, not Windows, the operating system from Redmond.
Like Windows before Microsoft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that took that good word from us away.
That was our first computer, and I remember this cool like MIDI program that I could play with and make music with.
Like a tracker. Like a tracker?
All I remember is I had to use the keyboard to make the notes.
But if you like pressed keys on the keyboard and would immediately play it. It was like a keyboard in the musical
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a recording or something.
No, but there's like these
I think
spreadsheet kind of.
Yeah, I think that was good on an Amiga.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant.
I had tracker software too. I really enjoyed doing just clicking around and listening. You could draw sound because you could just draw the notes you wanted to have, and you draw a line and it sounded somehow. And I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, we could. I remember being able to place notes onto a staff and play them too.
Yeah, that might be
like a piano roll.
The same.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the first computer we ever had, and then.
And when did you get your first real computer?
You mean a Mac?
Yes.
2003.
What was it?
A titanium PowerBook.
Hmm?
Titanium PowerBook.
Ah.
But it was right when I graduated from college.
I had one of these too.
It was my present to myself.
Nice.
I made a video how I threw it away later on because I put it at home in my stuff, and then I found it years later and I didn't need it anymore, and so I made a video of how I threw it into the trash can.
It was cool because you used to be able to take the iBook keys off of the keyboards and then make a black and white keyboard on your titanium PowerBook because they were interchangeable keys.
Yeah.
So my keyboard, you could flip these off.
I really want like all black keycaps for the MacBook Air. That's all I want from life. I have very low standards. because like I would try like Dvorak and all these like all these neckbeards keyboard layouts, but I really can't stand it if what's on the key doesn't match up with what like the ASCII code that's sent to my terminal. Like that just makes me queasy if it's not the same thing. But if they're all black, then it doesn't matter.
I'm actually thinking about it because I just had to buy a new MacBook and I bought a refurbished one because it was so much cheaper than a normal one. And I can only say if you get the chance, buy a refurbished Mac because it's perfectly like new. It has a different box, but otherwise it's very good.
But it has fun.
But it has a German keyboard. And I still got used to I didn't realize when I bought it, and then it came.
Rookie mistake.
Yeah, and now I'm just getting used to writing with an English keyboard or an American keyboard on a German keyboard, and right. And it's what's really impossible about it. It's the brackets, Klammern. There are one key off exactly on the German keyboard, and so. I just remember, okay, don't do it the way you would expect it to do. And if I close my eyes, everything is perfect because I have remembered the English keyboard. But yeah, now it's really hard to get used to it.
So you're thinking of buying keycaps?
So I'm thinking of moving to America and just buying or letting somebody buy me a new computer there. And
that sounds like a great idea. Yeah. Where would you move if you moved to America?
Maybe to California. I don't know.
I hear good things about working at Menlo Park.
Yeah, I hear that Berlin and San Francisco have basically an exchange program.
Right? Yeah, I heard this too.
We need a Hyperloop.
Really. Oh, finally. Yeah.
Finally.
I've sold Hyperloops to Ogdenville, now Haverbrook. And shit, what's the third place?
What?
This is like, do you know the Simpsons episode with the monorail?
Yeah, of course.
Ogdenville, North Haverbrook, and Brockway. That's where he sold the monorails to.
Okay.
And this is where I say Hyperloops. But yeah, we need a transatlantic Hyperloop.
Specifically between Berlin and San Francisco. Yeah.
It's going to disrupt the
if we can't afford the airport, price. I mean, this needs something.
Yeah. It'll be done faster than the airport.
Yeah, probably.
Probably, yeah. And you're living in California too most of the time, right?
Mm.
Or until very recently.
It's complicated.
No.
I still have an apartment in San Francisco, but I have been in Berlin since September 2013.
So that's for about half a year or something? A little bit longer.
About a half a year. But I've spent, actually, I think, I did the math the other day, I've spent almost a year of my adult life in Berlin. Which is cool.
It's a good start.
Yeah. But no, I have, I still have an apartment in San Francisco and have lived there for 10 years, so.
And don't want to leave? Or do you want to keep it, the apartment? Or?
I think I would like to stay in Berlin.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it better to stay in Berlin?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. No.
I mean, now that you're leaving.
Now that I'm leaving, Berlin is getting even better.
Yeah.
Shit. No, it's just 10 years in one place is a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
10 years in one place is a lot. And it's changed a lot. You know, San Francisco was the place that you went. It was the only place in the U.S. you could go if you didn't like being in the U.S., basically.
I always heard that New York is the city where you have to go if you don't want to live in the U.S.
Yeah, but San Francisco was kind of where all the wacky weirdos went.
Okay.
So it was the liberal, really liberal city.
Yeah.
When I moved in 2003, I had never seen a Green Party candidate on anything in my life. Ever.
What about Ralph Nader?
Not in local government. But the mayor, basically the...
Oh, you mean like in... Oh, I see.
But, right. It really in power.
But like actually...
Doing something.
Having enough of a political force in the city to put up a Green Party candidate for mayor.
Right.
I'd never seen that. And I'm like, whoa, I'm in utopia.
Until very recently, we haven't seen something like this too.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, San Francisco was definitely very, very, very liberal, very West Coast, very... Ohio is it's a swing state, so it's very 50-50, Republican, Democrat. And, you know, during election season, you always know there's an election coming because the political ads start a year before.
Isn't Ohio the state where always the last big parties are, because it's so much a swing state that it's the only state where you really need to go if you're a president candidate?
Yep. Because it's very much representative of the thinking in the country.
Yeah.
And big companies will do test products there too. So when I was young, we would have like Crystal Pepsi.
Oh.
We would have like...
And you 50-50 liked it.
Like a neon pink Snickers bar or something really weird. But they would do, a lot of companies do test marketing there because it's very much every spectrum of ideas of very, very left and very, very right. Very, very Christian, very, very atheist, and everyone in between.
And San Francisco takes out the right-wing Christian part.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. San Francisco sounds good for me. San Francisco is very liberal. Well, it's very liberal in the U.S. sense. It's moderately liberal in a European sense.
Yeah, it's really, from the political perspective, it's American liberal is kind of not right-wing, but much more free market and kind of different left wing from here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you would call the Social Democratic Party communist or something. Maybe not you,
SPD.
But yeah.
Really?
Wouldn't you?
I don't know.
But they're like probably like the left wing of the Democrats or whatever. Right. I mean, if you only have two parties, they're probably going to meet in the middle. Yeah, where we have the, what's the name of, there was that yellow party. What were they, I forgot. I feel like there was a party once at that place, but not anymore, I think. I don't remember.
The yellow party.
But why do the Democrats have the donkey as their, I never got that. Who assigned that?
Don't know. I don't know the history of that. I should.
I'm sorry.
I just heard recently that the Democrats are always blue and the Republicans are always red, which is really confusing if you're from Europe, because here left things are most of the times red and blue other side. And
or purple. If they're really red.
Yeah, it's really red and it's purple. And I heard a few months ago that it's only settled very recently, that they always had two colors, red and blue, and that the Republicans are always red in elections and the Democrats are always blue. It's only for 10 years or something. And before that, it would change every now and then on TV shows and in elections and stuff. So maybe the donkey elephant are, they have been just assigned a few years ago, okay. And we just don't remember otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's a tech company that came out of the Howard Dean campaign called Blue State Digital, and they did the first back-end kind of political website building systems.
Okay.
But it's called Blue State Digital because they only work on democratic technology and campaigns.
Interesting.
But yeah, that was what Obama... Blue State Digital was... It spawned out of the Dean campaign. It was really Drupal-based.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue State, actually, I can tell if something is made with Blue State because of the URL structures. Because Obama 2008 did use Blue State as well.
I have never heard of Howard Dean.
Yeah?
Howard Dean, he was a president.
I totally don't remember this guy.
Yeah. Well, it was 2004. Yeah. But they were the first, they were actually, the Dean campaign was really the first ones to bring in technology into politics, which is why the Democrats are so far ahead as far as technology is concerned in political situations. In 2008, Obama was running and doing analytics like hourly almost, and we would go past the Republican headquarters and they would be sitting there with paper.
That's like, what we expect them to do, right?
Yeah,
you mean Facebook
around,
paper.
They printed out the internet. But yeah, Howard Dean, the Dean campaign kind of started the whole...
Yeah, maybe that's why we here in Germany always thought that Obama would bring the change, even in kind of an internet way or something, because hey, he has a Twitter account, and so he's kind of like us.
I made the first Obama State Twitter account.
Obama State?
There was a Barack Obama. I think I made the first one. I'm not totally sure, but I think I made the first one. I made a Barack Obama for Obama or Obama for Nevada in 2008.
That almost rhymes.
Obama for Nevada. But in 2008, he only had his... He only had his national account.
I don't, even today, I don't know something.
Wait, there's 50 Obama?
I think in 2012, they did a one per state.
Wow.
But in the beginning, it was cool because there were all these things that you needed to do with social media that you just couldn't do.
Right.
But I got to log in as Obama sometimes.
And Obama followed you back.
MySpace and Facebook.
Obama followed you?
Obama followed everybody back.
Oh.
In the beginning. And when he was in Berlin, I and a friend decided to send him a direct message. Maybe he will take out his phone and the stage, but he didn't. I think he blocked us or something. Oh.
Anyway.
So you were a big Obama supporter back then?
2008, yes. Now? It was a different time. It was definitely after the Bush administration, everyone was quite happy to have him around.
Yeah, I was too. Everybody was. I mean, I've never had any interest in American politics, but somehow it changed then because we got to know, okay, it also influences our life quite a lot here in Europe, of course, and everybody wanted to get rid of Bush, of course, and so we organized. A friend of mine even organized an election party. So we stayed awake until the final count and everything. And it was really, yeah, that changed.
Yeah. Yeah. But in the beginning.
Whoa, shit.
In the beginning, I think what happened too is that a lot of the technical people from. A lot of the technical people from the campaign realized that they wouldn't be able to work in Washington because they're so used to being able to move quickly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and technology in Washington doesn't move quickly. So if you want to change servers, for instance, to run different technology,
right.
Government contracts out technology for 10 years.
Great.
So I knew some people who actually helped transition the whitehouse.gov website over mm-hmm. to the Obama administration. And they're like, this is out of control. This is so old and really slow. And they're like, yeah, government contracts, we can't change it. So what happened was that I think that all of the people who would have really been active about trying to change things
mm-hmm.
from a technical standpoint and from a... They realized that being in Washington would be too bureaucratic to actually make any differences. So we were even talking about the time, like, what if you had, like, you know, blame and praise for legislation as it got written or something. Right. So you could tell which representative. So if you could bring some kind of versioning to how
right.
laws are written. And I was talking to a few people that I knew who worked in Senate offices and things. And they're like, that would never happen. It's like people would freak out. But it would be great because you could see who wrote what bit of a bill.
Yeah.
And you could see who changed what. And it was it your representative?
Yeah.
Did they shove this weird thing into the healthcare bill that was about coal mining or something, who knows? And but there was a lot of discussion.
That's something I really like about the Pirate Party. They're kind of bringing this sense to the political view. It's when they, I mean, here in Berlin, Pirate Party is quite of it's not in power, but they're at least in parliament here in Berlin, because of the airport disaster, there's a Pirate Party member is the head of a committee that's trying to figure out what happened there.
Mm.
And I heard a podcast with him, and when he told, okay, they brought out all the documents and we had to digitize these documents, and the interviewer was like, were they in JPEG format or JPEG? and he was just laughing. No, of course they were printed out and they made physical copies of all these documents. They put them on a copy machine and they didn't scan them at the same time because they didn't know that this was even possible or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so these members of the Pirate Party started scanning them and OCRing them, putting whatever was possible on the internet for journalists to see them and to, because it was, there are so much documents that nobody would have, you don't have a chance to read all of them if you're one person or something. So it really would have helped if journalists and public figures would have read. Yeah, and that's something I will dearly miss in politics, that the Pirate Party destroyed itself so much and all this is gone. But
what happened? Because I was here in 2011 when they got the representation.
Yeah. That one. They simply destroyed themselves.
Yeah, but I couldn't explain how and why.
It's all Twitter's fault.
I mean,
Twitter is breaking everything right now. I was here and I remember seeing I had heard about them because they're from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember seeing these. I love actually being in Germany during an election because you can see how diverse the politics are. And I'm walking around Kreuzberg and of course there's like a pirate party, there's some crazy anarchist party, and I think there was a joke party that wanted to rebuild the wall.
Oh, there's plenty of joke parties.
Die Partei.
Die Partei, yeah.
I think they were those. That. Yeah. But it was cool, and then I didn't get all of the jokes on the pirate party signs, but there were.
Right.
I had some friends explain to me some of the jokes that were on the signs.
But. I mean, Kreuzberg is the election district that always sends the green guy to parliament.
Yeah, I am.
The only one. It's my district.
It's mine too.
But I can vote.
Honestly, I didn't vote for him.
You didn't?
I didn't, no.
Why vote for a loser?
I don't know.
Who did you vote for?
For the Linke candidate. Because I don't... I mean, he's a nice guy and everything, Ströbele, but he kind of...
I mean, it's probably his last...
Yeah. And he visited Snowden. I mean, it's would have been totally worth it to vote just for this for him. But yeah, I didn't know it by then. So I voted for a different candidate.
Fair enough.
And because she was helping out with a refugee camp here.
Mm, right.
Okay. That was the main reason. And Ströbele wasn't there, so I had to vote for somebody else. and let's talk about work a little bit. I'm trying to get to the point for like an hour
speaking
or something.
About designing transitions.
Perfect. Somebody has to say it.
Yeah, Lindsay worked at Apple. This is how we know each other.
Oh, yeah.
You showed me around campus.
I did.
Mm-hmm. I tailgated into one infinite loop.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you did.
And they have no tailgating signs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
What did we meet? At WBC.
No, this was Music Hack Day, San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally
with,
right.
With Matt.
Ah, that was 2010.
Yeah, this is right when I joined SoundCloud as an intern.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. It's what you do in your internship.
Yeah, and I have this picture of you and Matt and Eric. And me, it was all of the music people. So it was LastFM, SoundCloud, and iTunes, all standing in front of the one infinite loop sign. I actually just found this photo on Flickr the other day. You can find it still. and then we had a really great dart match. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
But that was the next year, I think.
Yeah, it was later. I won.
We were playing darts for the future of music and SoundCloud won.
Yes.
And I think I taught you how to play darts.
And this is how iTunes got out of the business.
I don't remember. Like, details are hazy. I think we finished right around when the bar closed.
Yeah, we did.
So I think I was like, I think I had to like hit one thing and that took me like an hour. I forgot the rules of darts already.
That's okay.
Yeah, the darts is getting very complicated in the end. In the beginning, you're just by luck, you're, oh, I got close to it, and it's getting closer, and then you have to hit the three, and you're
right.
Yeah, and do something.
But then, what did you make at that Music Hack Day?
Nothing.
Really?
Like I like totally failed. I wanted to do a guitar pedal that uploads to SoundCloud, and I spent the weekend installing drivers and compiling Linux kernels. And that was...
Sounds like it's a great time.
I had a blast.
I tried to make some... That was the first hack day... I was still working at Apple and I was really afraid to be there. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, because I wasn't allowed to be in, you're not allowed to be really public, I guess, you know? And this is like normal, like there's no persona, you can't
hush.
Technically be on Twitter, and you know, being on Twitter was even kind
of a bit of Twitter?
I'd never used Twitter. But at the time it was, nobody really knew what to do, and you know, you weren't really allowed to have kind of a voice publicly about, especially if you you weren't really, like, you couldn't trash Microsoft or competing products and things. You just need to keep
They trashed themselves, no worries.
But I was really afraid to be at that hack day because I was working for iTunes and I ran a team too. So like one of the things they teach you is like, no matter where you are, you know, you are always representing Apple. So you can't get really crazy, basically, which makes sense. And I actually, it's some people it's not right for, you know, Google has a totally different mentality, but yeah. I actually was everything that I made at Apple would have been their property. So anything I made at Music Hack Day would have technically been theirs. But I think what I tried to get...
So you're saying I beat all of Apple at darts?
Yeah.
If Steve had known this.
we tried to correlate... I was really curious if you could correlate someone's music listening habits to their concert-going habits. You totally can.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, we used like Last.fm... play counts and song kick dates via your location.
Yeah, that sounds like a classic hack.
Yeah.
And you did this on Hack Day.
I'm good, huh?
And you did this on Hack Day.
Yeah, it didn't really get done so much because the girl that wanted to do the interface stuff, which was not me, was she wanted to do it in Flash.
Oh.
And I was, we had just killed it. Flash.
like why isn't it working on my iPhone?
like fundamentally, you know, like my team, you know, we had just transitioned all of iTunes over to HTML, and you know, we're very...
Wait, iTunes was using Flash at one point?
No, it was this like wacky XML markup thing,
right?
Do you remember
so iTunes is today, it's HTML on the back end.
Front end.
Yeah, front end. Yeah,
well, I mean, back end, it's still web objects, actually.
Yeah.
Duh.
Whoa.
But where does Apple find all the guys who are still able to write web object?
Yeah. Who even knows what a web object is?
Yeah.
I think the store still runs that, actually.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I can't imagine that they would even change it, honestly.
Yeah.
But I think that goes to prove that.
Let me check. Apple jobs for web objects.
But the URLs, you can't see it anymore, really. You can't, you might be able to pull them out, but the URLs got changed at some point.
So Apple.com/jobs is not what you think it is. Corporate. Corporate retail students, my profile. Yeah, it's just corporate.
So someone.
But at some point, what happened was. iTunes was XML. The store part.
They reinvented HTML somehow. Reinvented HTML somehow. I mean, you're representing Apple wherever you are. So.
No, not anymore.
So even today.
For the record, I quit in July 2011. but no, so I worked on the iTunes store. I got hired as a UI engineer, which... They were, I think they hired me because I had this interaction design background and we prototyped a lot of things in Director.
And you knew LaTeX, so you would be good and you would be a great match for the XML code of iTunes.
Yeah.
just for the record, I have a job opening here for an iTunes store software engineer. And under key qualification, it says application service such as WebLogic, WebObjects, or any J2EE server. So in other words, you already work here.
But no, I got hired as a UI engineer, but the UI, that team was at the time, we did everything, kind of anything content related. So like iDVD templates and iPhoto templates and anything that was content related inside of an app.
So like tutorials and...
It was more so like the cards, for instance. And this, I didn't actually work on these because I got hired to do iTunes Store specifically, but the other people on my team were doing, we were kind of like this content service to the company. So, you know, you needed to lay out a card or you needed to make the iMovie template. Like this okay. is not the this is not the interface of the app.
Yeah.
It's how does the user mess with content basically?
So the number templates are from numbers templates from or Keynote templates are from might be from somebody.
By that point, no, because okay. the teams got split out really quickly. But basically, we were doing this like prototyping stuff, and I think because I knew director, and I knew interaction kind of programming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a little bit of ActionScript, and I knew Lingo, and I knew how to implement visual stuff. But I also had a design background, so they just needed someone in the middle. I wasn't designing, and I wasn't back-end coding, but I was in the front.
You knew both sides, and you knew how to connect them and to communicate between both sides.
Pretty much, yeah. But very, very quickly, I did solely iTunes stuff. But that iTunes stuff was...
When was it?
I started in February 2005.
2005, okay. So
Valentine's Day.
Oh, very nice.
But that was... The iTunes store started in April 2003, I believe.
It might
Mac
be, yeah.
Mac only, and then 2004 it went to PC.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was... When I started, it was music only, desktop only... U.S., Canada, and Europe, I think, was it.
Those are the only
countries and that stuff. But yeah, the whole front end of the store where you could buy stuff was this XML markup.
Whose idea was that? This? So to write an XML?
I actually don't know. I think what happened... is that Safari and the store were being built similarly at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but in that pretty traditional Apple...
Ah, and Safari wasn't ready yet, so...
Well, in traditional kind of Apple silo, they don't know about each other
because mm-hmm.
they're secret projects. I think finally they may have known about each other. But anyway, it was there was something you couldn't do. I think there was something interface-wise you couldn't do on the web at the time also. If anyone from my old team ever hears this, they're going to tell me that this is all wrong. But I think I actually don't remember. But it was a rendered thing. But it was fun because I would code stuff and I would forget a bracket or something, and we didn't have any
syntax.
I wasn't checking anything, yeah. So I would crash the app all the time.
Okay, that's how you found out that it wasn't working.
But yeah, I wouldn't close
it. And you did it live because you didn't have any sandboxes around.
Yeah. But no, there was a time the guy that wrote the renderer for iTunes wanted to kill me all the time. Like, you just are, or we would push something to the front page that I had written or some feature, and then the app would crash.
That's why iTunes is crashing so often even today.
No, actually, iTunes...
It's still your code.
No, the iTunes store switched to HTML in 2009 with iTunes 9.
Okay.
But that was a long time coming.
iTunes 9. Before 2007, before the iPhone came, did you notice anything about this or something like this? Or was it really... When the iPhone was announced, did you expect anything, or did you?
That was all really secret.
Really, so yeah. you it wasn't you. Redesign the iTunes in a touch friendly way or something for 320.
So my team did the implementation. There were two splits of the team. So my team did all of the content. So anything that got featured, or any promotions that got done, or. If American Idol was on, we would make custom pages in the store or this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we did those promotions. So they were more kind of like web publishing things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some of the things we did would make it into some store interface things, like core store interface stuff. But the core store, we had more fun because we could experiment with weird interface stuff, because we would put up a page for a month and then take it down.
Mm-hmm.
Or we would put up a page for a week and take it down.
So it was okay if it broke, or I mean, afterwards, and you didn't have to.
Yeah, but we could also break kind of the Apple interface
rules.
Because the pages would be used, but they weren't the core. It wasn't the buy button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't the play button. It wasn't the, you know, the swooshy things was what they were called. The swooshes and showcases and the brick things on the storefront. But we worked, that was the other half of my boss's team. So there were two of us. There was like store UI engineering and then content UI engineering. So I worked with all the content stuff.
And so you didn't know anything?
I knew about iPad.
Before it came out. But everybody knew about the iPad.
No, iPhone was really locked down. Really, really locked down.
Okay.
Really locked down. But that was typical. Like, that was very, very typical. Because even people who, on my other side of the team, like, it was still, you know, you didn't know what they were working on.
But you know that they were working on something.
You hoped. You would ask. But then sometimes you realize they were working on something and you realize, I'm going to get screwed. And I really need to figure out what they're working on because somebody's going to come by and be like, we're changing everything.
Ah, okay.
And then you have to change because we had built content management systems to publish worldwide at some point because we're publishing to 100 some countries to iPhone and iPad and Apple TV and desktop. So at some point, those systems would all change because the way the code work changes or the way that we pass colors to pages would change or, you know, like the you would add new elements that needed to be styled differently or something. So
you didn't know about anything about this before it came out and you just had to redesign everything for this new device or something like the Apple TV or something.
Hardware was very, very much locked down.
Even if it was directly in your...
Yeah, but I actually think it's good because I think what Apple is really good at is focusing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody wants to know about the new thing.
Of course.
But it's a distraction, honestly. So if you know years ahead of time that there's a new iPhone, but you really need to kind of just execute and continue to do your work. And I think what Apple is very, very good at is focusing people on the right things at the right moment. And I think that's why when I was there, you could ship really pretty good products. Like, because focus was something that I think Apple did really well. So you introduce the right people to the right project at the right time.
Yeah, but it might end up very weird if two teams are implementing mainly the same thing over and over again because they don't know about each other. And I mean, I heard from somebody at Apple that they weren't even allowed to access. It's mostly like for developers. They're able to see their own code, but they weren't able to see code of other teams, so you couldn't find bugs in this code, or if it crashed, you didn't know why. And so I think it's a mixed thing.
I think it depends when you work there too. As the company got bigger, you had more risk of leaking things, and you had more risk of people not being loyal, so you really had to kind of...
Yeah, of course. I mean, from the product perspective, that's all right. But from the working perspective, I mean, that would have been better to know everything beforehand, or wouldn't it?
For me, I don't think it affected us so much.
Okay.
I think the typical Apple, you know, life cycle is everyone works really hard on what they're doing. They get really frustrated with it, and then it ships, and you're like, ah, Keynote, cool. And you just go through this pattern two or three times a year, and it's fine. And it never really bothered me, honestly. It wasn't something that bothered me. And Steve would change things at the last minute all the time. Podcasting was actually a different color purple. Podcasting was a really bright purple in the beginning. And then a week later, Steve's like, this is the wrong purple. We're changing the color.
Executive decision.
Okay.
And, well, but if you look at if you can find screenshots on the internet of when podcasting launched during the keynote in the store, it was this bright purple. But then later he's like, it's the wrong shade. And then we had this thing where we had these two rules, which was no plopping. So you can't just plop something onto a page, like just throw it in there. Because this is obviously not as easy as you think. And like someone's like, Yeah, but it's just the color change, right? No, that's going to take us forever. But yeah, podcasting was actually a bright purple. When iTunes did their 10-year anniversary in 2013, there was a little kind of timeline of the iTunes store in on the web, I think. And I noticed that they had put in the Photoshop comp of the purple that was from launch day.
That would have never happened under Steve.
And how would you have changed something like this? You didn't just pop it. You slow transitioned from one color to another, or what?
No, it went pretty quickly.
No, this time. But normally it would have taken.
You mean the plopping?
Yeah, it's a plopping.
I think that's just like the elements don't appear
on the screen.
They fade.
No,
in.
But like if somebody comes by and says to my team, the UI team, even the design team, oh, can't you just plop that little badge right there?
Isn't that easy? But if Steve came by, plopping was okay. Okay, sure.
Oh, what is this? Rob has just pulled up one of the oldest iTunes store screens I've ever seen. Oh my god.
I mean,
it's this bright blue stuff. Yeah, this is all images here.
I've never seen this.
Really?
Yeah.
This is all this old XML stuff.
Rob wasn't born then, back then.
I have never purchased music on iTunes.
Really?
I've never purchased anything but apps. Through Apple's various stores and stuff, I think. Maybe I have like one movie at some point, but I'm trying to bring up the purple here.
Podcast purple. Look for
somebody like
podcast launch day. I think it was 2005 actually, because we did like 6 launches in a year or something. It was wacky.
Yeah,
We did 6 launches or something in a year.
There was some time when iTunes 6 came out and 3 weeks later or something, iTunes 7 came out. I don't remember the version numbers, but there was a really, really quick interval. That's perhaps... Oh, God. Inside Mac Radio over there. Looks really.
This might have been... Oh, that font is terrible.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
This is Lucida, I think. Is
that Lucida? This is the fresh purple? Please put this in the...
Oh, the brushed metal. brushed metal.
I put
metal.
It in the pirate pad.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. The pirate pad automatically inlined the image and now I have to see it again.
Anyway, no, the...
Technology is too smart for me.
I don't know. But there were things that changed like that all the time. One of my favorite stories, though, was when... it was awesome to work around music people, right? Because these were the people that were there. They were like, we're changing this. We're going to change how this works. And there was I think he was a former editor of Rolling Stone, and then a guy that did curation for a record label in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And they got into the longest argument about when exactly the Sex Pistols broke up to the second. Because I don't know the story behind it, but it was really fun because you worked with really, really passionate people who were really passionate about music and media. And
how did they settle this?
I don't know. It was 3 in the morning. I don't know. They were working on a launch or something. But that was a cool...
And when something launched, you really had to work to this early moment in the morning or through the night or something?
Yeah.
So it was very common.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard all these stories, but afterwards I was never this sure. Did this really happen or did the people always...
It would happen. There was kind of this perfectionist mindset that kicked in at the end. And everybody kind of... And I think it was neat because we were talking about this earlier before... at dinner, but I really feel like when we shipped products, everyone was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was responsible for something being right and being on time and looking good. And, you know, you couldn't point at someone and say, oh, well, you were the project manager. You didn't do your job. So I couldn't do my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone had a sense of responsibility of making it perfect. But when the store was this pre-HTML stuff, even when it was HTML, we would take Photoshop comps and overlay them into the code that we wrote because you could pixel match everything.
Oh, yeah. I've done this once in my life, that you could put a Photoshop on top of the HTML and look pixel perfect. I hope I never have to do it again.
Yeah. I think the cool thing, too, is that I think what's really neat, too, is that meeting people who are iOS developers outside of Apple, like the Apple culture has culminated itself to people like you and Rob. And
me not so much, but Rob more.
But what I think is really neat since I've quit is that the culture of kind of, I think every iOS developer I've ever met has a visual sensibility and the care for how things look and how they act.
Yeah.
And interaction design, and I don't think this is common in other fields.
No, it isn't at all. I mean, when I started doing web development, I was the guy who had visual eye because I didn't put Times New Roman and red bold blinking on a page where it didn't belong because at least I had some kind of sense that let's ask somebody to design this and really many, many developers don't do this at all. And since I started developing for iOS, it's most of the times people at least... I mean, you see really ugly iOS apps, but you don't see them very often. I mean, it's most of the time they are okay-ish. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Comic Neue?
No. Oh, yeah. I have, actually. But what I really think... what are you going to say about it?
It's like Comic Sans finally get the redesign it deserves.
Everyone's favorite font. No.
But
I'm post Comic Sans hate, you know, like it really gets old. You have these people like, what does this mom think setting her daughter's birthday party invite in Comic Sans? She has to use a Helvetica Neue Ultralight.
Yeah.
Oblique. Jesus Christ.
But you don't think that did this out of hatred? It's a complete redesign of the font.
No, I mean.
I mean, they did a decent job.
I mean, there's a need in the world for a cheerful font. Also, I mean, Comic Sans is apparently very good for dyslexic people.
Oh, yeah.
So that's nice. And it's apparently the way it came to be was they did Microsoft Bob, which was this like, the idea was you booted into your Microsoft Bob and instead of like your desktop and everything, you had your nice living room.
You don't know Microsoft Bob?
No. What is Microsoft? I don't know. I really don't know.
It was a company back then that did Windows.
Yeah.
How long have you guys been Mac users?
Forever.
Since I left high school.
Do you remember Yuli's Moose? Do you remember the moose that would run around in like OS 7 or 8?
No. There was some kind of extension where you could add a moose or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was Yuli's Moose.
My first
Somebody
Mac.
Ported it to Mac OS 10 at some point.
Oh.
Oh, I could... Oh, yeah, Apple history. Did you ever go to the... You went to the... what was it called? Stump the Experts at WWDC?
Yeah.
Yep.
I got a t-shirt.
You did?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What did you ask?
I was there.
I was kind of a shit show.
Were you there?
Yeah.
So... the way I did this was that I knew if I wanted to get my question asked, you know, you had to like submit questions in written form and put them on the stage. And I figured if I wanted my question to get nominated, I need to piss them off real bad. So
and you did this really, really good.
My question was, what was the most expensive in a purchase Apple ever had? That was my question. And my second question underneath that was, how hard can it be to fix my last name? And then I put my last name as Robert B and then reverse Pilcrow capital A with a, because they always break my name in the encoding, right? And then they were like, oh, because like I got them by their text encoding knowledge anyhow. And what happened was that they were arguing. So the answer, what I think was the correct answer to this question, was that Apple at some point accidentally released an iOS test app to the store.
And he's a really smart guy, right?
And this is a, like they had example code on developers.apple.com for in-app purchases. And like they showed you how to like have in-app purchases. And the example they had was a game. Like there was no game. There was just like a table view. But you could buy race tracks for like $2 a mm-hmm. pop. And I did that. And then they refunded me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the only, as far as I'm concerned, is the only in-app purchase they ever had. But they were arguing that if you order a like a calendar from iPhoto or whatever, that that's an app purchase. But it doesn't use StoreKit. And
that's
it's not
the same thing.
It's not in the app because it arrives on your doorstep via mail order, right? So
but
they
I
were
don't
like,
even think it uses the same technology, does it?
Right, it doesn't.
It's not the same thing.
It's not StoreKit.
No.
So they didn't award the audience any points, but I still got my t-shirt. And then they had like this. This table full of joke prices where I could choose from, and I got a dock connector extender for my dock connector if you have like a case and yeah. You need a dock connector extender, and they also got penis reduction pills. yeah. And then...
And they weren't allowed to put an Apple logo on the t-shirt.
Right. Yeah, right. So they... For some reason, they weren't allowed to put. I think maybe because the place where they got the t-shirts printed wasn't properly licensed or whatever.
No. I think it was because they didn't like this too much. This whole thing.
This is not the
expert thing.
So they had like
Apple
stencils.
PR wasn't really happy about it.
So you had stencils and spray paint, and you were supposed to spray the Apple on yourself, but I didn't do that because I figured. I could do it, like, if I really wanted to, I could do a better job later point in time. So I still have the t-shirt, never worn, because the smallest size they have is, like, triple XL. Which, if you've ever seen me in person,
so you could.
That's about how tall I am. Like, I could wear it sideways. Yeah. And then I lost my passport.
Oh, God.
When I went back to the hotel and checked if they had my passport, all they had were the penis reduction pills. And then I left in the hotel room, and then I had to sign like their ledger that I picked them up. So at the Chester Hotel in SF, there's like a written statement of me that I lost my penis reduction build.
And they found them for you.
They found them for me.
It could have been worse. I mean, yeah. For this WWDC, on the page where they're announcing it or where they announced it, there was really this big picture of Stump the Experts and have fun and things like that. I think they're kind of changing their mind. Maybe this year they will be allowed to put an Apple logo back on the t-shirts.
Mm.
But
it's like a nice t-shirt. It's a bit big, but
maybe that right at the moment could be. Yeah, it's an Apple T-shirt. It's from
the Tech Talks.
Yeah,
ah.
I'm still having.
That's kind of a nice T-shirt.
Nice.
It has a TV tower, totally worn.
Sure, that's not a Jin Mao tower.
No, that's a Berlin TV tower because it was in Berlin.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's completely straight. It isn't. Bend a little bit down there.
That would have never happened under Steve.
It was under Steve.
Oh, shit.
No, it was not.
Was it? No, it wasn't. But
no, no, it wasn't.
No, it
I don't
wasn't.
Think the tech talk started happening until a lot later.
This one was in 2011, I think. And he was already dead then.
I think so.
But he might have taken his last... Press may have been makes
TV,
it
TV tower.
I don't know.
Yeah. So
we just got to this.
The rest is history.
Definitely.
Yeah, but Gernot of course was already on a Tech Talk before that. So in 2008 or 2009, they already had this Tech Talks.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that was iOS stuff though.
But
I was doing the internet.
You were doing the internet. Quite a lot of our listeners are iOS developers. And, of course, the question on everybody's mind might be how to get promoted on the App Store.
I actually don't know how it works anymore.
Don't you have to like make a high quality app that inspires generations? And
or you have to sleep with the correct person.
That always helps.
I do. I will say that I think that all of the iTunes stuff is founded on personal editorial, and that was what it was founded on. And apps were the same. And if I found an app,
so but somebody from your team liked or you liked an app and you decided, okay, that's great.
No, I think there's a process. I mean, it's so much different now because when I was there, but I could still, like, when in the early days of the music store, if I saw a band that I liked, I could see if they were on iTunes. And then if they weren't, I could talk to the people and label relations and say, hey, this band is really good. And yeah, sure, great. And then they would listen to it if they liked it. It was all very meritocracy based. Like, if they liked the band, they would promote the band.
And, okay.
And that was, you know, everything that you see on those main pages. And I don't think this is pretty common knowledge, but that's all human editorial.
Nobody, I only heard some stories that say asking you, so please provide some material that we could use for an
episode. Oh yeah, that's promotion, what I do.
And.
But
I think you
have to get that far.
You actually were promoted multiple times on the Mac App Store, I think, right?
With SoundCloud.
This was SoundCloud app.
Well, that was because
there was nothing there.
No way.
Because Lindsay liked you so much. No?
Well, I just said, hey, this is a good app.
And there's
because
only
it's such a great app that how could we forget this?
I mean, they feature three apps at the same time, and if you only have four apps.
No. But it was the same. It was the same with music. So if you were always welcome to, again, this was kind of, you know, it's not your job, and they could of course, and everybody who makes an app or a record or any content, and they find out you work for iTunes or the Mac Store or the App Store. Oh my God, can you listen to my album? But it's sort of like you don't. If I didn't like it, I would never tell the other person about it, you know? But if I liked it, because it reflects on me, you know, my taste.
Right.
And if I know what's good, and then it's like if someone gives you a resume, you don't hand the resume off if you think that person's a bad person.
Right.
Or you don't hand the resume off if you think they're not qualified. So, but there is a kind of like taste making aspect. I mean, all of the, I don't know what the state of it is now, but there were lots of, the App Store. I think App Store has collections of different types of, you know, this is your first iPad. These are the apps you should download.
Or yeah.
But those are all, they're all, yeah.
Picked. Apropos resume, you helped me write my resume in English. Translated it for me, and you totally ripped it apart and said that I should do it completely different. And I did so because it's really a funny story because I think German resumes are done completely different than American resumes.
Yeah,
and
they're way different.
And because I got to somebody who whose job is to write not resumes but to help you find a new job and stuff like this, and this she was telling me make it as explicit as possible, try to write everything down you ever did or ever saw or ever heard about, and repeat yourself of course, and write down every conference you've ever been to and write as much as possible, and you just source it and you looked at it and you asked,
nobody got time for that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's expected in the US, it's expected that your resume is one page.
One page?
One page. Maybe two.
Okay. You told me two and I got it down to two and it was really
two is okay if you've had a really long career, I think. Two is okay.
Okay.
But if you think of, if you know, when I would hire people at Apple, like I would have to go through tons of resumes, and you needed to get a sense of the resume is really meant for someone to just want to talk to you in person.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to entice them, and so of course, you know, Apple really looked for people that would fit into the culture, obviously, and so you know, you looked for someone who would culturally fit, but also technically fit. But when you have to hire, you have to really kind of stand out. So, yeah, one page. Maybe two. But it's not the same where, like, I know, I think German resumes have your date of birth and gender and things like this on it.
Picture.
Where a picture and...
Even sometimes the birth date of the parents.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Don't know.
But in my mind, that's almost, it's too much to discriminate against on somebody in a way.
That's not a problem in Germany.
Huh?
That's not a problem in Germany.
Well, I mean, U.S. hiring laws, like, you're not allowed to discriminate on age or gender or whatever. And I think, like, you know, we were even taught when we were hiring at Apple, like, don't judge someone based on their language, their English language skills, because they might be really technically qualified and culturally qualified. And you need to read a resume thinking that their native language is not English. You know, really thinking about
it. But if they don't speak English on a good level, doesn't that, like...
Yeah. But, like, it depends on the role.
Right.
But
still, I mean, you got to communicate.
But it was
right?
It was a sensitivity.
Yeah.
It was a cultural human sensitivity thing to not be judgmental about it. But even U.S. hiring laws, you're really not supposed to ask someone. You can't really ask somebody, are you married? Where do you live? Because you can't start to profile them in a way that they could possibly find a way to kind of sue you for not.
Ah, okay, so you can...
For not hiring...
Yeah, of course. Beforehand. Allow me to write my birthday and my put a picture of myself. In Germany, it's very typical to put a picture, a nice picture of yourself onto your...
Why does it matter? I don't get it.
Do you know I want to hire only for? Pretty people.
To me, like, as an American, it's too many things to judge someone on, and you really just need to judge them on what they're good at.
Yeah, but
like looking.
Well, I remember, so I got to notice European resumes because they would always have photos, and then I would be like, man, this guy's really arrogant. Why is there a photo on his resume? Like, what the hell?
I'm so pretty.
Oh, look how sweet I am. Hey, look, I'm 23. Where's my birthday?
Like, I've got a birthday. I bet you don't even have a birthday.
But yeah, it's just different, and yeah. But I learned at some point. I was like, all the ones from Europe have pictures. What the hell?
So you did discriminate against them?
No, we were taught not to.
So you just ignored the picture,
right?
No, I actually
except
had,
for
my,
French.
My boss was German, and so he's like, "No, this is common." I said, "Okay, he's not a really just like pompous dude." No.
I mean, he might be, but. It's not because of the picture.
I know that it's good to write everything down you ever did because most of the time, I once was here in a German company and I was part of a hiring process from the other side. And typically it was like somebody has to a practicum?
Internship.
Some intern had to go through all this, resumes and... sort out, and somebody would go in before and just ask them, okay, we need some Java 2 enterprise engineer with some Oracle experience and stuff.
Web objects and
web objects. Not web objects. Oracle and J2EE. And I really noticed that I got to one of these interns, why did you throw this out? And it didn't say J2EE. Yeah, but here it is, Java 2 Enterprise Edition. And so the intern didn't know that how to spell it out, and so he threw out all of the resumes. So better you had written it down twice, one J2EE and one Java 2 Enterprise Edition.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
But I mean, I don't necessarily want people, like, I mean, imagine Apple would only hire people for web objects that know web objects, right? They would have a very hard time. So aren't you trying to find... smart people who could learn J2EE if they had to, rather than just like people who already know it or people who bother putting it on their resume?
Smart people would decide like this, but other people just decide, okay, if web objects isn't written there, then I won't hire this person.
Okay.
I think if hiring in the U.S., or at least hiring, if you look at a job description in the U.S., you can ignore half of what's on there. Like when I got hired, if you looked at my qualifications and what the job description said,
yeah,
it was like, must have, you know, 5 years of experience doing something. And I had like no years of experience because I was pretty much out of college.
Right.
But if something says 7 to 10 years of experience, you can probably have 5 and it's fine. Or it doesn't, I think the hiring in Germany is much different than in the US, because even at Apple, like, lots of people on my team who were front-end web developers went to school for economics or political science or something else, but they were really good at what they did, so it didn't matter that they studied. And you know, the other thing that, like, I think this is much different, and from what I can tell of German hiring and education and U.S. hiring and education in the U.S., it doesn't matter what you went to school for.
Yeah.
Really, it doesn't
only
matter.
Only matters that you went to school.
It just matters that you went to school, which is arguably good and bad. But it also, especially in my dad's generation, you know, he kind of now thinks that it's too specific. You know, like, you have to have had this many years of experience in this specific field with this degree. And he said, this is bad because it's bad for innovation. It's bad for
diversity
in things when you're looking for someone really to just kind of be kind of a little, you know, cog in a machine to make stuff, because that's kind of what it becomes instead of innovating. And, you know, like the Apple narrative is that, you know, Steve Jobs dropped out of school, did LSD and walked around barefoot a whole bunch. And so I think that culture to this day still lives on inside the company. So, but compared to Google, for instance, like, we would have been more interested in someone who had a broad set of experiences, because those experiences make you more kind of worldly and thinking out of the box. Where, like, in Google, most of the people I knew who worked at Google, Google and Apple people clash constantly, because Google people go from typically what I could tell, like, they're highly educated, very, very smart, but, like, went from this thing to this thing to this thing and followed things in a very linear path in life, where people at Apple were like, I really feel like if I had to drink any Apple Kool-Aid, like, I think this was part of it. But they really, you know, people were kind of wacky, but they were really focused. Like, they worked hard and they played hard, and they, like, really, everybody had interesting things outside of their lives. And even the engineers of every engineering team, actually, even everybody had a well-rounded life, I guess.
That's kind of really funny, because I mean, I was always in a technical I did always do technical stuff, but I always thought that it's bad that I didn't do only one thing. But when I applied for jobs lately, it was always good to have some other perspective, and only if for the reason that, oh, when we have finished this app, we might need some kind of web developer, and I read that you did web development too, and only for that reason. And I haven't told so yet, but at least not on the show, I got through the interview process at Facebook, and just got a job there, maybe, if everything works out. And it was also good to have done many, many different things. But now, when I'm going to apply for the visa, it's bad that I have done many things, because for the visa, it's very necessary that they hired you as a software developer, so no web development at all. So I had to change my whole life to not be a web developer, and I haven't really.
Government.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's crazy. As a visa, yeah, I don't know. In Germany, getting a visa was quite easy for me, but...
Really? You have a working permit? Hmm? Of course you have, otherwise you couldn't work.
Awkward.
I just thought you were an illegal immigrant.
No, you can't stay in Germany for more than 3 months unless you have a visa.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And how you get a visa?
I was able to get a freelance design visa,
but
this is kind of this creative visa. I think that might be just specific to Berlin.
Okay.
But I think it's valid for the rest of Germany. No. You needed to have... What did I have to do? I thought it was quite easy. People like to complain about German paperwork, but I think if you learn how to follow instructions in your life, you shouldn't complain about these things.
That's very tautological.
But it's silly.
If you've worked at Apple, everything is easy.
No, but it's silly. I actually find it offensive when people complain about... Well, I find it offensive when people move to a new country and then complain about the country. And then, of course, like people like to relive stereotypes. It's like, oh, German paperwork is like this.
Right.
And it's silly because it's like, look, you showed up in a country that you're not from. You should follow the rules and just do what they say. You can't circumvent the...
Yeah, with this attitude, you can't fail in Germany. That's
totally actually correct. When I was applying for my visa, I went into my immigration lawyer with all of my paperwork. She said, you're really organized.
This is like achievement unlocked.
Well, and then I went to my tax, my Steuerberater, and then I said, yeah, I've done all this research. And she's like, this is like the most organized thing I've ever seen. When I was in the next big thing office doing my paperwork, Gernot's like, you are more German than me.
You are German, Gernot.
And that's really an achievement, I think.
It's, I don't know. You dot your I's and cross your T's and pay attention to rules. But nah, it was easy. You can, with an artist / design visa in Berlin, you can get granted the visa the day that you go to Aschaffenburg.
How was, like, speaking or not speaking English or German with them?
Original with me. So you have to take someone who speaks German because they can't, I don't think technically, legally, you're allowed to do government transactional things in English.
Okay.
Because you're held liable if it gets translated wrong.
Mm. So Ulrich is liable.
Hmm?
Ulrich is liable.
No. He doesn't know yet.
No, but it basically what everyone says is that if you're American and look nice, they're going to probably give you a visa.
Okay.
No, but they want to make sure you have to write a statement of intent and why you're interested in the economy of Berlin and why you're interested in being here and... Do you have contracts? You know, do you have people who want to work with you? Do you have health insurance? Do you have a degree specific to your work? Do you have... how much money do you have?
That's important, so you don't go just here and...
Yeah, exactly. So you don't take tax that's... Or basically take off the social system that you...
And how long did it take to get the visa?
I just needed to get the appointment. So the appointment took about a month to get because they're so busy.
Okay.
But you just do the appointment online. But you have to get your residency paper. So you have to get this first.
Your Anmeldung.
Yeah. And then.
So you got here before you got your visa?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So you have to register your address and then get this. And then. But the waiting period for going to the Aschaffenburg is... maybe a month or a month and a half.
Okay.
But once I figured out I was able to stay, then just went online and made the appointment and figured out, well, I can probably get all the paperwork done by then, so
right.
Why not?
Sure.
It doesn't sound too bad.
No, everyone likes to really complain about it. I've looked, researched all these things, I'm like, you guys are just lazy.
I mean, look at the paperwork you have to do for your H-1B.
Honestly, I'm very happy that I didn't have to do it.
You have a professional.
There's some lawyer that's hopefully did it right for me. And I mean, all this deadline shit, it's really... now I'm complaining, but having to have ready everything by April 1st, to get this visa, you have to apply until a deadline for the year, because and this deadline is April 1st, and... So, because my recruiting process started when something early in March, everything had to get out really, really quick. And from this lawyer's assistant, all I got from mail by her, I got to know her for the very first time. Hello, I'm Max. Yeah, you're already too late with your papers because everything had to be this quick. I had about not a week to get everything. And... because if it isn't there on April 1st, you have to wait a whole year. And then they're going to send it out to the, I don't know how this process even is called. And then I will get to know by mid-May, end of May, if I got a visa or not. And then I have to wait for, I don't know, another few months. And even then, when I have a visa and I picked it up and it's a embassy and I book my flight and I'm going to, and I'm showing the visa at the border, then even then they are allowed to send me back and just say, no, you're not getting in here.
I'm sorry. I actually feel like I should say I'm sorry, because it's when you apply for a visa in Germany, even when you're going through the paperwork, you're allowed to stay.
That's
so
great.
I had figured out all the things I needed to do to make sure that it didn't cause any, you know, issues for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that they would probably give it to me that day. But if for some reason it needed to go back through some government process,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't get kicked out of the country. And I think, honestly, it's just kind of rude that we do this. Like, every time, everyone I know who works on an H-1B visa in the U.S., I feel just like, I feel like I need to apologize. So I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I just hope it works out in the end. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. And I mean, if I would have to go there first and pay the rent for a flat for 2 months, I would be completely broke. So maybe it's better if I know before I go if I will get the visa or not. That's really something. My wife looked up for flats in San Francisco, and you should really apologize for the rents you have to pay in San Francisco.
That's, we could do a whole 5 other podcasts about that.
It's really, she's looking up every time flats on Craigslist, and now in San Francisco, hey, here's this nice flat, and a few days ago she showed me something, and how much is it? And she gave me the answer, oh, that's not too bad. And it was $3,500 for something you pay 1,000 euros here.
Yeah.
A nice flat, everything was okay, but nothing fancy, but it's really, that's kind of, rents in San Francisco are just crazy. But you know this, of course.
But you do want to move to SF proper. You don't want to like move to Oakland or whatever.
I mean, if we are going to move, the only reason I'm moving there, no, it's not the only reason, but the main reason is to go to San Francisco and to live there for a few years. So, yeah, I think we want to do it proper. Or is Oakland nice? maybe
I don't know. I've lived in San Francisco proper my whole life, or my whole adult life, basically. But I think the thing that, when I moved from Ohio, of course, if you do it just from a pure money perspective,
mm-hmm.
you're never going to win.
Mm.
In 2003, I wasn't winning, you know. I moved to San Francisco, and my first 2-bedroom apartment, I was right out of college, was $1,500.
Okay.
So I had a roommate. My rent was $750 for the room, and my parents thought I was crazy. Why in the world would you pay $750 for a room that you can have for $200
in Ohio,
and you can have a car, and you can have a lot of space, and you can have all this stuff? So if you do the direct money, you're never going to win. You weren't winning then, and you're not going to win now, but you have to realize that you have no winter. You can drive to the snow if you want to in the winter.
Okay.
You know, you drive to Tahoe for 3 hours and you get to snowboard, if there's snow, but it didn't snow this winter so much. It did a little bit. But then you go, if it's cold in the city, you drive out of the city and it's warm, you can go swimming. You go south, you get to LA, you get to the ocean. You have to just look at all of these other things. You don't need a car.
That is a good question. I don't need a car. So that's completely out. That's great.
You can buy my car.
It has a stick shift.
It's a really reliable old Volkswagen.
I don't have a car here, so maybe I don't need one.
You don't need a car. It's nice to have a car to get out of the city, because there's no way to get trains out of the city so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also rent a car and go on trips and stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, you weren't winning in 2003, and you're not winning in 2014, money-wise. And compared to Berlin, like... But but I looked at Berlin places the other day. What in the hell happened?
Yeah. It's getting out of hand.
It's really crazy.
The rent or the price for the flat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard so. Until now, I didn't have to look because we have a nice flat. But, yeah. Maybe if somebody wants to move in here when we are... Okay. Two hands raised. So.
I call dibs first.
Yeah, we can dare.
We can dart it.
We can dart. We can... It's on. I'm going to win this time.
Last time was for apples. This time was for the flat in Berlin.
This time it's for Berlin. It would be awesome if I won because you grew up here.
I was started out of my own city.
Now, I wish I had moved when my friend brought me here again in 2009 or something. That was when I came back. But that's okay. Everything changes.
Everything changes.
All the time.
Do you have anything? Anything?
Any closing words?
Any closing words?
Berlin is awesome. Berlin is awesome, and San Francisco and Berlin have a lot in common.
You're making it kind of hard to leave here.
No, they do. I think the cities have a lot in common.
That's great. That's it.
You have to find it, though. Hang out with the old hippies.
Old hippies in San Francisco.
There's so much beer left.
I'll drink the beer.
Okay.
We have some beer.
Why not?
You don't? Because we are finished now?
Yes.
For tonight.
Next podcast, do we have a date?
We don't have a date yet, but we have a guest, but I'm not going to announce him yet.
Okay.
The next podcast will be in German.
Snowden.
Auf Deutsch.
Snowden in German. No, it's just, yeah.
Schnieden.
Schnieden?
Schnee.
Schnee.
Schnee. How do you say snow?
Schnee.
Schnee. It's not winter anymore. I don't remember how to say snow.
Yeah, don't bother. Bye-bye. See, hear from you soon.
Trzysikowski.
Trzysikowski. Bye.